I'm steady trying to find the motive. Why do what I do? Freedom ain't getting no closer. No matter how far I go, my car is stolen. No registration. Cops patrolling. And now they done stop me and I get locked up.
They won't let me out. They won't let me out.
Locked up.
They won't let me out. No. They won't let me out.
Locked up.
They won't let me out. They won't let me out.
Locked up.
They won't let me out. No. They won't let me out.
Heading uptown to Rio.
Good evening. Thank you for coming on again, another edition of Prison Pipeline. This is the show where we advocate for prisoners and prisoners' rights and their families and loved ones who are in contact with them. Today, our stories are going to consist of Mr. Michael Morales, California state prisoner, got a stay on his execution, got an update on Mumia Abu-Jamal's appeal, and today was the day that one of the world's most famous prisoners was executed. We'll talk about Mr. Malcolm X. We'll be back very quickly with this edition of Prison Pipeline.
Products moving fast. As I sold the last bag, fucked around and got locked up.
They won't let me out. They won't let me out.
My nigga got locked up.
They won't let me out. No, they won't let me out.
I got locked up.
They won't let me out. They won't let me out.
Girl, I'm locked up.
They won't let me out. No.
Mumia Abu-Jamal was convicted and sentenced to die. And he continues to put out an almost weekly prison address, prison essay, for us to hear online and in the news. Up next is the current edition of Mumia Abu-Jamal's weekly essays here on Prison Pipeline.
Madness, time of horrors. There comes a time in the life of a nation when lines are crossed, and once crossed may never be recrossed again. In that root of all things Western that was Rome, it was Caesar crossing the river Rubicon. In this new Rome, it is the path to war on a whim, on a lark, on a lie. It is a kind of imperial fever, the fatal petulance of kings, for war is the sport of kings. It matters not why. The reasons announced to the world have faded like old photographs in the summer sun, and we learn, years later, that reasons weren't reasons. They weren't even good justifications, yet they sufficed. They stoked emotions, fueled our ignorance, and ignited the war machine, the U.S. Wehrmacht, and unleashed the dogs of war. Regimes have been changed, countries bombed, civilians slaughtered for naught, and things are worse than ever. Hatreds are deeper than ever. Oh, sure, puppets have been installed. Even an occasional constitution has been ghostwritten. But if you think this is a portent of peace, just remember the so-called president of Afghanistan, Hamid Karzai, who is protected today by a palace guard of armed Americans, so fearful is he of his own countrymen. While it's true that this mad war was forced upon the nation by a narrow neoconservative cabal, it's also true that it couldn't have happened without the connivance and subservience of the press. They performed like cheerleaders and water boys of a big game, rather than tribunes or truth-tellers. And now, war, like a hungry leech, eats the nation's wealth, consumes a constitution, and deadens the soul. It militarizes millions, appealing to the blind, dumb instinct of obedience. But also, as people learn of the lies that led to war, it deepens cynicism and spreads the seeds of distrust far and wide. War awakens us. And awakening can be the seedlings of a new social movement that says no to war and yes to reason and life. From death row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal, author of We Want Freedom, A Life in the Black Panther Party.
These commentaries are produced by Noel Hanrahan for Prison Radio.
Yes, indeed. That's how it goes right here, right now. Mumia Abu-Jamal letting you know. The current status of Mumia Abu is as follows. This is from the law offices of Robert Bryan, dated January 24th. This is the Mumia Abu-Jamal appeals to the Third Circuit Court, Philadelphia. This is the first time any court has made a ruling that could lead to a new trial and his freedom. The court has accepted for review the following issues raised on federal habeas corpus and the subsequent appeal, all of which are of great constitutional significance concerning the right to a fair trial, due process of law, and equal protection of the law under the 5th, 6th, and 14th Amendments to the U.S. Constitution. Then it lists the three different appeals. And another issue under consideration by the federal court pertains to the death penalty. It addresses whether the death judgment can stand due to an unfair jury constitution. The case is now moving rapidly. The court has issued a schedule for extensive briefing, with the first brief to be filed by the prosecution. The district attorney made a 30-day extension of time request, which has been granted, so its initial brief is now due on February 16th, just last week, so hopefully we'll get something very soon about that. The complicated briefing process will go through the spring, then we will present oral argument before a three-judge panel in the U.S. Court of Appeals. This is a giant step in our effort to secure a new and fair trial for Mumia. Our goal is to win this life and death struggle and see him walk out of jail a free person. However, we must not forget that Mumia remains in enormous danger. If the case is lost, he will die in the execution chamber. Thank you for your concern and support in this campaign for justice. Cordially yours, Robert R. Bryan, the lead counsel for Mumia Abu-Jamal. Yes, indeed, and we do hope that it works out. Been a long, hard struggle. Got some good news for other folks listening to Prison Pipeline. We have a young lady who's working, and she's getting her KBOO instructions and filings and ducks in a row, and she's going to be on the air with us in just a short time. So we'll be looking forward to that. I won't say her name now. I'll let her say that when she comes on. I'll let her bring herself up when we do it. Also, let you know, we've expressed interest from one of our Latino brothers here at the station, one of our Latino brothers who wants to come on also during the Prison Pipeline and be a part of what we're trying to do here, a consortium, so to speak, a group of people doing it together down here at KBOO. Because no one person could do it themselves. Even Ann Rose Pierce, our founder of this show, she'd be the only one who could almost do it herself. Even she needed some help sometime. Prison Pipeline, we'll be right back with some more for you. Stay up. Stay strong.
You know how many youths in jail? How many black men? This is what an inmate told me. Let it be the Most High's will to have me where I am. Let them see that they can't kill the inner part of man. Even though the cell is locked and they've thrown away the key, I'm the finest of the Father's crop. I deserve to be happy. I'm just saying, down, somebody's down in the concrete jail cell, and nobody gives a damn, 'cause most of them are black. Down, somebody's down in the concrete.
Up next on the Prison Pipeline show, information letting you know, giving you strength to stay up and stay strong, and letting the families know that you're alive and kicking. Okay, this next story called California Seeks an Alternative Way to Execute Morales Before the Midnight Deadline. This was dated 12:30 this afternoon. The execution of condemned killer was delayed after two anesthesiologists backed out of ethical concerns. that prosecutors sought a judge's permission Tuesday to proceed by a different method of lethal injection before the death warrant expires just before midnight. The execution, which had been scheduled for 12:01, was pushed back to Tuesday night after the two anesthesiologists withdrew. Their presence was required by a new set of guidelines issued last week by a federal judge after Michael Morales' lawyers argued the three-part lethal injection cocktail used in California was a cruel and unusual punishment. So in response, authorities went back to the U.S. judge, Jeremy Fogel of San Jose, in a bid to ensure the execution would be carried out before the 24-hour expired at 11:59 tonight. After that, state officials would have to go back to the trial judge who imposed the death sentence in the 1983 movement. So we'll see what happens about that. Further readings I read here that Michael Morales did take blame for the rape and murder he did back in, I think it was 1985, something like that, 1983. But they're challenging the way he's going to be put to death. So stay tuned for that. Supposed to happen later on today. Also, the news we're working on is today is the day, February 21st, 1965, that Sir Malcolm X, Mr. Malcolm Little, a.k.a. Malcolm X, and his other Islamic name I need to learn to pronounce correctly, was assassinated this day at the Audubon Hall in New York City, Harlem, in 1965. Today is 41-year anniversary of that. And when we say anniversary, it's not like it's a celebration. It was a tragic time in history. As a man who was rising and had been self-taught, he got a lot of stuff going on. No telling where he would be and where we would be had he been left alive. We'll be back with a little bit about Mr. Malcolm X.
Now your rock gives it down. I'm not forgetting anyone. Love will be deep within always. How can I have faith no more? Judging me on a 110 scale, way over 20, this man soars. Peace and love is the same to him. Created all of us. I will show that I am a king. Liberation of myself is a must. I'm just saying, down, somebody's down in the concrete jail cell, and nobody gives a damn, 'cause most of them are bad. Down, somebody's down in the concrete jail cell. Now your rock gives it down. I'm not forgetting anyone. Dirty toilet seats, unsanitary, hasn't been flushed for weeks. Terrible environment, can't even sleep. Police brutality, still it alert. Hey, Oja, this ain't nothing sweet. A ward enough to tell you what time you must eat. The food look
right. Yes, 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 that's people wanting you to stay up and stay strong in that concrete cell you're in, hoping it'll be the last time, y'all. Okay, Malcolm X, Malcolm Little, had a run in life. His early days was numbered. He had a little crime spree going on, young player, young burglar, Malcolm and his best friend Shorty. They would end up in jail for their crimes and sent to separate prisons. But while in jail, Little would make his conversion to the Nation of Islam. He would kick drugs and completely turn his life around. From what there's been told, there were a number of people in prison who influenced Little. Well, for the most part, it boiled down to one man, Mr. Benjamin. And Malcolm X is already, Malcolm Little, already an intelligent man, gets a lesson in English language when Benjamin has him transcribe the entire dictionary. This would do wonders for Malcolm's oratory skills and provide him with his impressive vocabulary so often on display. On his release from jail, Malcolm went to the Nation of Islam, met with Elijah Muhammad, and began his new life. All right. Okay, in 1946, he was sentenced to prison for burglary. And when Malcolm was released in 1952, there we got it. I was trying to get it. That's 6 years, y'all. 6 years in prison. My gosh, for burglary. And when he came out, he joined the Muslim temple in Detroit and took the well-known name of Malcolm X. In 1958, he married Betty Shabazz, and together they had 6 daughters. In the early 1960s, the Nation of Islam had become well-known, and Malcolm was their most known and popular speaker. In 1963, however, the black Muslims sentenced Malcolm for his remark that the assassination of United States President John F. Kennedy was like, quote, chickens coming home to roost. Famous quote, unquote. In the following year, Malcolm broke with the Nation of Islam and formed a secular black nationalist group, the Organization of Afro-American Unity, OAAU. In 1964, Malcolm made a Hajj as a pilgrimage to the Islamic holy city of Mecca in Saudi Arabia. And based on this trip and others to Africa and Europe, he renounced his previous teaching that all whites are evil, and he began advocating racial solidarity and adopted the Arabic name of El Hajj Malik El Shabazz. On February 21st, 1965, while addressing an OAAU rally in New York City, Malcolm was assassinated by men allegedly connected with the black Muslims. 41 years ago today, and people only knew the real Malcolm X. Okay? Coming up. Excuse me. If people only knew the real El Hajj Malik El Shabazz. Coming up, if it all works out right. Going to hear a little bit about it. Here on KBOO, the hardest working station on the radio.
Malcolm's vision of the world grew and his ideology evolved, threats on his life increased. In Egypt, he was poisoned, and in February of 1965, he was banned from entering France. On February 14, 1965, Malcolm's home was bombed. Someone had thrown a Molotov cocktail gasoline bomb through his front picture window. No one was injured. Malcolm believed members of the Nation of Islam had bombed his home. But later, he discounted his belief that the Nation of Islam were the only group trying to kill him. On February 21, 1965, Malcolm stepped to the podium at the Audubon Ballroom.
Come out of my pocket, come out of my pocket. And I heard my husband say, everything is all right, everything is all right. And someone about third or so that was seated in about the third row stood up, and I heard shots, and I saw people crawling on the floor. So I got down too. Then when I was looking out and I saw someone look in amazement to the front, I knew they had shot my husband.
Malcolm X died of multiple shotgun pellets and bullet wounds in the chest and heart. The assassination occurred this way. Two or three men with shotguns rose from the first row, while another man who created a diversion sat behind the man with the shotgun. After the shooting, the audience captured Talmadge Hayer, and a police officer outside the ballroom caught a second suspect. Ironically, New York newspapers only mentioned the second suspect once. Talmadge Hayer confessed. He said Norman Butler and Thomas Johnson, also arrested, had nothing to do with it. Hayer mentioned that he and others involved in the assassination had not and had never been followers of Elijah Muhammad. None of them had a personal motive for killing Malcolm X, but they had been hired to carry out the assassination. Hayer did not identify others involved, nor did he identify who hired him, and the prosecution and defense never asked him. The prosecution believed that members of the Nation of Islam assassinated Malcolm X, and the defense went along with it. On April 14, 1966, Hayer, Butler, and Johnson were sentenced to life in prison. Defense motions to open police files on Malcolm X were denied. It is well documented now that the FBI, through their COINTEL program, wanted to prevent black nationalist groups from organizing and recruiting new members. In addition, they wanted to prevent the rise of a messiah who could unify and electrify the militant black nationalist movement. Did the government have a hand in the assassination of Malcolm X?
And you're saying that you believe this was paid for by whites?
Yes, by white people. Because what would it benefit? What would it benefit one of us to kill him? It wouldn't benefit nothing. Wouldn't benefit us anything at all. Just a white power structure of this country. Anytime a black man in this country stands up for his constitutional rights, he dies. What does Malcolm X mean to you?
He meant a great deal to me and my people. I'm sorry that a good man is gone. At the first idea of it, I couldn't have cried anymore, I don't believe. If I had lost my mother.
What did he mean to you? Can you tell me a bit more about it?
He meant deliverance for my people. And I hope we all walk in the same footsteps as Malcolm X was walking in.
Here, at this final hour, in this quiet place, Harlem has come to bid farewell to one of its brightest hopes, extinguished now and gone from us forever. For Harlem is where he worked and where he struggled and fought. His home of homes, where his heart was and where his people are. And it is therefore most fitting that we meet once again in Harlem to share these last moments with him. For Harlem has ever been gracious to those who have loved her, have fought for her, and have defended her honor even to the death. It is not in the memory of man that this beleaguered, unfortunate, but nonetheless proud community has found a braver, more gallant young champion than this Afro-American who lies before us, unconquered still. Many will ask what Harlem finds to honor in this stormy, controversial, and bold young captain, and we will smile, and we will answer and say unto them, did you ever talk to Brother Malcolm? Did he ever touch you? Did you have him smile at you? Did you ever really listen to him? Did he ever do a mean thing? Was he ever himself associated with violence or any public disturbance? For if you did, you would know him. And if you knew him, you would know why we must honor him. Malcolm was our manhood, our living black manhood. That was his meaning to his people. And in honoring him, we honor the best in ourselves. And we will know him then for what he was and is. A prince, our black shining prince, who didn't hesitate to die because he loved us so.
Amen. Assassinated today, 41 years ago, Sir Malcolm X. Lastly known as Mr. Shabazz. That was a piece of a documentary put together by a young lady with a grassroots news organization, one of the pioneers here at KBOO. We'll talk about the Lanita Duke. Thank you, Lanita, again, for putting that documentary together years ago. Shows on cable TV every once in a while. Big up. Ozzie Davis did the eulogy at the funeral. And this is KBOO Prison Pipeline. You're glad you're listening here. One of the fastest half hours on radio. Okay. We're going to be up next week again. Like I said, new people coming on. We're going to broaden the horizon because there's lots of people with lots of input on this prison issue. It's just not a one view, one vision thing. Okay. Up next, our Black History Moment. Excuse me. Moment of the Month. We've been doing the Attica Uprising, Prisons on Fire documentary. We continue now. We finish out. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week. Stay up. Stay strong. Uhuru, Sasa, and everybody else. Big up.
People should be aware of the legacy of people like George Jackson, without whom we would not be able to do the kind of political work. We wouldn't have the conceptual apparatus that we have now in terms of trying to understand the centrality of the prison in relation to the economy and in relation to the social landscape in general.
A formation grew out of that, you know, in support of George, in support of Jonathan, and, you know, and it still exists.
David Johnson.
They're still paying that price. They're languishing in these institutions. Some have died. And if something is not done, it would be criminal for no voices to be raised against the brutality, the isolation, the sensory deprivation that takes place, and the flagrant violation of their human rights.
Settle your quarrels. Come together. Understand the reality of our situation. Understand that fascism is already here, that people are dying who could be saved, that generations more will die or live poor, butchered half-lives if you fail to act. Do what must be done. Discover your humanity and your love in revolution. Pass on the torch. Join us. Give up your life for the people. George Jackson. You have been listening to The Struggle Within, produced for the 30th anniversary of the murder of George Jackson by the Freedom Archives. Many thanks to those who contributed their voices to this program and the hard work of Lincoln Bergman, Judy Gerber, Anita Johnson, Andrea Lessler, and Claude Marks. Thanks also to the support of the Paul Robeson Fund. My name is Jonathan Jackson Jr. Both George Jackson and my father loves me a great deal. An unmistakable name. A pride that comes from a history of uncompromising resistance. And a commitment to identify and fight injustice at every turn. For further information, please contact us at area code 415-863-9977. Or go on the web at freedomarchives.org.